sleep, but it'll be fine.
Mike Gardner, current chair of the Ashland Park and Recreation, and I might just add that what we usually use in meetings, if you can't hear, you might raise your hand, and then that'll inform the speaker to speak into the mic.
My name is Peggy Burns. I'm a citizen member of the committee, former librarian and business owner.
My name is Jackie Bachman, and I'm a citizen member. I am the chair of this committee, and my background is special education.
Hi, I'm Marianne Moore. I am a citizen member of the commission, and I have been a yoga teacher at the Senior Center for about 12, 13 years.
Mary Russell Miller, citizen member, SOU faculty.
Rob Casserly, I work for SOU. I'm the program manager for OLLI at SOU, and I'm a citizen member.
Michael Black, I'm the director of Parks and Recreation.
I see you're not going to chime in.
I'm Betsy Daniel. I am pitch-hitting for Susan Desigard.
Thank you. And I'm John Lang, as I said, and if you want to know more about me, come see me after the meeting, and I'll give you a little background on why I go into a whole lot of things. I've had a lot of experience with this kind of facilitation, and I hope it serves me well today and in the future with this committee. I want to say for everyone's benefit, a moment about how the agenda was constructed. Essentially, Jackie Bachman, the chair, and I generated ideas, met with Michael Black, Rachel Dials, who's not here, and Susan Disregard, and then emailing back and forth, constructing what we think will be the best agenda for the community at this time on the second, in our second meeting. I want to say to the committee, I'm going to be pushing us through and doing everything I can to stick to the time. We have a tight agenda. I'm sure we always will. So if I move you along on occasion, please don't be offended. It's to get us going and make sure everything is done as efficiently as possible. I want to say to the group out here that I am aware there's a lot of activity outside the community work here that has to do with senior programs, and I would never suggest altering anyone's activities. I would, however, say and advocate that you do your best to contribute to making this committee the best it can be. They're going to do their best to represent you fully and as faithfully as they can. So let them do their work and assist them in carrying it out. Okay? I'll have some comments about how we do public input in a moment, but right now, what I want to do is, let me say this now for you. As often happens in council chambers, if you wish to have something read into the record and give public input, you'd like you to fill out the yellow form that's right here at the edge of this table and give it to Betsy, who will give it to Jackie, and Jackie will have some words about how that will go at that time when we get to that part of the agenda. So, committee, our next moment is to approve the minutes, which you were all sent a copy of, and I hope you had a chance to read. I do need a motion for approval of the minutes.
I had a question.
Yes.
I have something about the minutes. I think it was important to add that Michael Gardner, relative to the question of informed listening, that he did say that we do not control public input, and that should be part of the minutes. Anybody
agree?
Further
discussion of that?
I would move to approve with the amendment.
Second motion.
There's a second. Is there any more discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
And any opposed? Any abstentions? And Jackie, I just sort of took that function away from
you,
and I didn't mean to.
No problem.
But as long as we're good to go, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So it says on the agenda next is we're going to revisit the ground rules. I just am going to quickly read them, and then if there's any comment on them, we can have that. First and main rule, to be respectful of others in all ways. One person speaks at a time. No sidebar conversations while someone else is speaking. To do your best to discuss issues, not people. To work to assume the goodwill of others. And then, with regard to our process, ask to be called upon by me before speaking. Raise your hand. We will create a parking lot list of topics that we table for later if they're not relevant to what is going on in the moment. Ask questions if something isn't clear. Okay? So we can stop and get clarity if something's not clear. And decisions, to the extent that we have them early in this process, will be done by a vote. And Jackie, you'll call for the vote next time. Okay.
Fine.
Yeah. Thank you a lot. The next item on the agenda is to revisit the expectation clarification portion, and I think it's important that we do that. So I want to remind you that we have agreed that we are going to move toward a goal recommendations to the commission in 3 to 5 months. We're going to talk about our scheduling a little bit later. More in more detail. And I want to remind you that we can have a number of recommendations, even competing recommendations in the form of a minority report. And how those recommendations are going to get formed, you all will decide. What's on versus what's off the table? We talked about that. Everything's on the table. Everything is on the table for discussion, except two things. One is that the committee come up with no change as a recommendation, and two has to do with personnel issues. That's not going to be part of the recommendations. Okay. Those recommendations will be made by vote, where it says there. And another expectation I'd like to clarify, request of the commission staff, including Michael, Susan, Betsy, or Rachel, they have to come from the entire committee. They're going to provide reasonable support for this committee. Exceptions will include requests that require lengthy staff research, requests that require spending money, and requests that are made by individuals as opposed to the entire committee. Now, there may be something that they agree to within those boundaries, but that would be a special moment. So that has to do with staff support. We've talked about two listening sessions, which we will fashion together, you will fashion together later, and a survey. There's more on that later today, discussion about the survey. Do you have any questions about the ground rules or the expectation clarification that I just repeated essentially from last time? Yes, Anne.
I wonder if the, although the report is due in 3 to 5 months, if there is any provision in our efforts to perhaps make more timely recommendations that could be acted on sooner rather than at the completion of a 3 to 5 month analysis.
Let me make sure I understand your question, okay? Are you saying that you... Is there a provision for making a recommendation to get things going before all of the recommendations are done and that those could be enacted? Jackie, I see you're shaking your head yes. Is that because you agree with that idea or that's because I understood what Anne said?
Both.
Okay. Well, I guess you're asking me. I don't know what the commissioners would say to that request, but Michael, do you want to comment on that?
I can't speak for the commissioners, but I can say that one of the goals of this group is to ensure that the senior center continue to function. And if you can frame any recommendations within that, then yes, I think it is our responsibility. Jackie and I, or actually Jackie and Rachel, I'm kind of filling in for Rachel today, would take those to the commissioners as they come out.
Well, that fits with what I was going to say. Like, I don't see why not. You know, it seems like a good idea. Okay. Michael, you had a comment or question?
I just wanted to clarify that when we originally set the guidelines, the 3 to 5 months, we expected the clock to start on October 1st. So that kind of gives you an idea of, you know, when we'd like to have recommendations in. And kind of answering that same question is... the longer we drag it out, the longer we can't get started on what we need to do. So just for clarification, look at October 1st as the start of our process.
So that would be then ideally finishing January 1 or, you know,
by March.
Yeah. So when we get to talking about our scheduled meetings, this will be part of the backdrop for that. Okay. I think most people are in favor of making this as efficient and as quick as possible without sacrificing thoroughness or excellence in the recommendations.
And I would just add, you know, the committee can probably take as long as they decide they want. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the original intent was to try to move it along as quick as possible. And originally we had set 3 months. We expanded it to 5, but in my view, you know, we started October 1st. We had our first meeting last month, and, you know, we're working on this, and we'd like to get through.
Okay, good. Jackie?
I just want to reiterate that I think most of the people sitting here would like to be able to move as quickly as possible in getting through this process and coming up with recommendations. And I surely hope that if we have requests to staff for simple things that can be done along the way that are not necessarily big costly items, that we would be able to start moving on some things today, some ideas that could happen. And we'll get to that in our issue section.
Thank you. Thank you. Good. Other questions from the committee? Okay. Then we come to the portion of the meeting for public input. Some of you have already filled out forms. Are there other people who need these, one of these, who are interested in speaking? I can just give you one. And in the meantime, we can do others. Welcome to you. Okay, excuse me.
John, it might be a good idea to have the chair explain kind of this
So we're going to have public input tonight, and there's a total of 15 minutes of public input. And so I have three forms that have already been turned in, and we will, as we get the forms all together, get all in, then we will divide that by 15 minutes. So we're looking for people to speak on whatever their concerns are, but not to have repetitive concerns. The best use of those 15 minutes is what we're looking for. And if you would like to give your time to another person so that there are fewer speakers, then of course there will be more time for each of those speakers. So at this point, we have three speakers.
And how many more out there? One, two, three, and four. I'm sorry, I didn't want to rush you. So you call out here, you're there. And there's one more coming. Okay. So does that mean there's a total of seven, Jackie?
Excuse me, I'm sorry, John.
Does that mean there's a total of seven?
Yes.
Okay, and we have a total time set aside of 15 minutes. And so would you instruct them on how
to Sure. Do so we're going to need a timekeeper.
And I'll be doing that ruthlessly.
Okay. Okay, so we have a little over 2 minutes for each of the seven people.
Okay.
So, and, yeah, well.
You know what, I'll do it.
Okay, so when the timer goes off, if you can complete your thought, I don't want you to feel that you suddenly have to abruptly stop. So the 2 minutes might be a good place to give a just a warning so that they can finish up their thoughts.
Okay, then your warning will come in the form of this sound. Warning.
Okay.
I don't want to use this time for
practice. And we're going to bring you up two at a time. And so the first two people are Heidi Gottlieb and Sue Wilson. And if you could please make sure that you speak directly into the mic so everyone can hear you. And again, for the audience, if you hold up your hand, if you can't hear, then we'll remind people.
Is it possible that you extend the time to 3 minutes? It's not that much more. It's 21 minutes.
21 to 15.
You know, it's only 6 minutes.
You know what I'd like to do? Are you hiding?
No, I'm
sorry. You must be. I'd like to ask the committee to consider that, certainly for future meetings. Jeff, can we do it, take 30 seconds or so to consider it now?
One more really quick. John, someone from our TV audience says they can't hear you. Could you try better to speak into the microphone? They're not getting a total experience.
I have my own microphone. How about that? I'll do that. Thank you, Michael. Committee, do you want to have a moment of discussion about extending the time from 15 to 21 so that everybody could average 3 minutes was the request. Comments?
Yeah, I would just like to say I recognize there's a tremendous amount of frustration with the opportunity for public input. And I don't know whether it was scope of our committee, we can offer other avenues outside of this or being available for input from individuals in the community that have concerns. It's good to have this on the record and that there's time for that. But I also think it's important for people to feel that this is not the only place for that kind of information coming to us. And to also encourage people from our committee to be accessing the website that you guys have put together that has some excellent information and opinions that we should all be aware of, so that this isn't the only avenue.
Right.
And so is that speaking in favor of, well, right now I want to just spend about a moment on whether or not to expand this time from public input to 21 so that people can take a full 3 minutes. And I don't want to spend a whole lot of time deciding. Jackie.
Okay, I think we should expand it because we didn't have public input at our first meeting, and so now they can have a little bit more time. And then I think we should add in the issue section and make sure we have time today to address what Ann is talking about, other ways for people to give public input.
You got it.
Okay. So, the first one we had is Heidi.
Hi. Over a month ago, we asked Commissioner Gardner, have there been any attempts by the Commission to generate data about the underserved senior community? That was the phrase that the Commission has used. There are underserved seniors that they want to reach by expansion. Do you have any data? Have you done the research, a needs assessment, a survey that established this need? The answer was no. So the idea that the senior program needs expansion is APRC's idea, and it has no statistical or factual support. It's a generated need. One of the things that we've learned from the Commission in recent meetings is that they are listening to the senior community. The proof of their listening is that they have changed some of the things that people objected to. They're backpedaling. What is indicated is that their recommendations were ill-conceived, ill-considered, formulated with no context within the community, and with seemingly no awareness as to the consequences to our vulnerable senior population. I believe Ashland SOS Group is largely responsible for making them backpedal, but it does not make APRC look good. As a bone to the public, they've created this ad hoc advisory committee. You've been chosen by the APR staff and tasked with formulating a new, improved, expanded program. But the first thing APR has done is taken two things off the table. First, restoring the laid-off employees to the senior center program. And second, any review of APRC's entire process and recommendations. APR admits they made some errors, and there was a little bit of poor communication involved, but they contend that we need to go forward from here and reformulate the senior program. Those two items are the issue. They are what broke the successful state-recognized senior program. As such, this makes the Senior Advisory Committee just window dressing. This committee has talked about wanting public input to be, in quote, informed listening or, quote, informed input, trying to massage the public commentary. You should know that we're very informed. Our issue with the committee is that you are held to the standards of impotence. You do not have decision-making abilities. You can only make recommendations which APRC then considers. Your recommendations can be completely overridden by the Commission. You are bound by the very action that started this mess in the first place. If this committee cannot and does not address the underlying problem, this is nothing more than a drawn-out attempt to normalize serious wrongdoing. A senior recently asked Ashland SOS what was the problem in the first place that led APRC to get into this. Great question. The initial statement of what they were doing was based on financial concerns, the need to generate more revenue in an underserved population which they never established or identified. Again, the problem is something they created. Responsible public servants should proceed by first identifying the problem and the need. Then they design goals and specific objectives. That's followed by the creation of a plan to carry out the objectives to solve the problem. They didn't do any of that. They still don't have clear goals and objectives, and they never define a problem. APRC has lost the public's trust. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Sue Wilson. Thank you.
Ashland SOS has an extensive list of resources on its website, ashlandsos.com. We have studied all of the listed resources in depth and discussed them with experts in the community, and it would be beneficial if you do the same. Director Black's memo for this meeting continues to attempt to discredit the laid-off senior program manager, Christine Dobson. It inaccurately portrayed a reporting of cost recovery and indicated that there are gaps in partnerships when there are not, and did not include a full list of partnerships under Chris's management. On the Ashland SOS website is the audio of Chris describing the then senior program and partnerships at APRC's regular meeting on January 25th, 2016. It's also shown on RBTV. Resources found on AshlandSOS.com include the fall 2016 performance audit, a link to the APRC meeting agendas in minutes, and the actual audio tapes of all the senior subcommittee meetings from January 24, 2017 and August 8, 2017, which present a more complete and different picture than the minutes. It provides links to the City Council and APR meetings, agendas, and minutes, the Ashland 2015-17 budget, and the Ashland 2017-19 budget, and the APRC cost recovery references in the budget. It gives a final memo of the APRC recommended changes to the senior program. It has the senior center information, 124-page finder prepared by the senior manager and given to the APRC senior subcommittee in January 2017. It has a memorandum of understanding between the Ashland City Council and the APRC dated August 19, 2014. It has the Ashland City Charter, the Ashland Municipal Code, key facts about seniors, all the seniors' voices, audios of all the seniors who spoke out on the APRC and City Council meetings. It has all the letters to the editors protesting the changes to the city, the senior center, and these articles. And note that the AshlandSOS.com website information is based on these documented resources. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next two speakers are Peter Smink and Michael Hirsch. So Peter, you're up first.
Okay. Can you hear me? Is that close enough?
I think so. Don't raise their hand.
Okay. I'm here today to explain why a statement in the memo from Michael Black in your package is
need to
incorrect.
Put the keep it closer to you. Okay. Getting closer. Pull it in.
I'm here today to explain why a statement in the memo from Michael Black in your package today is incorrect. With regard to the quality review document prepared by the Senior Advisory Board, it says, and I'm trying to begin this in quotes, pardon me, not very easy to understand, but the numbers are not representative of the actual cost recovery. It appears that the manager has compared an entire year's revenue to less than 1 month's actual expense. This skews the cost recovery to over 40%, which is inaccurate, unquote. I helped prepare those numbers, and the numbers do reflect the entire year's expense. The quality review document explains, and I quote, the following spreadsheet highlights the revenue in the form of a stipend for rent from the Tai Chi, yoga, and line dancing activities. It identifies the cost of offering the activities and the associated revenue, unquote. It does not claim to represent all the many other activities that happen at the Senior Center because the Senior operates as a donation-based model. Another way to put that is by saying what the Parks Director said to the Senior Program Manager. When police and fire have to pay their own way, I'll ask you to. I'd like to also point out that the budget numbers in the memo for the last three biennia include costs that were not expended for the operation of the senior program. Health insurance costs included under fringe benefits were budgeted in 2016 as $48,849.01, but none of the staff availed themselves of the health insurance. A review of the actual year-end expenditures instead of the budget figures would reveal that the senior program came in under budget, even when the health insurance item was included, despite having not been received by the employees in the senior program. The APRC wrongly claimed in their November daily tidings guest opinion that senior program is one of the most expensive programs, when in fact it's their least expensive program. They wrongly assumed that the program with the lower cost recovery percentage was the more expensive. But at $175,000 per year, the senior program is subsidized much less than the golf course at $297,000, the nature center at $278,000, where the much larger subsidies for the recreation program itself. A more accurate representation of costs would be actual program net costs in dollars, not percentages, using actual year-end costs, not budgeted costs. If those metrics are used and the senior program is correctly credited for its hundreds of hours spent processing 400-plus heat assistance and utility discount after education on behalf of the Electric and Public Works Enterprise Funds, its net cost would more truly reflect its actual strong financial performance. In summary, cost analysis needs to be done more precisely and accurately, because otherwise, garbage in, garbage out.
Thank you.
I'm going to be very brief. I just want to say that there are many seniors who have things to say, pro and con. And I would like all the public members of this committee to consider doing what I sent an email to Jackie about, and that is publish personal office hours and location. So let's say you pick 4 hours on Thursday and you're going to be at the senior center Thursday afternoon, that people can make an appointment, come to the senior center, sit down with you one-on-one, and give you their personal opinion, which you guys can then agglomerate and use for future decisions. Let the people talk one-on-one. Don't make this an email game.
Thank you. Our next two speakers are Susan Rust and Mort Pearl.
My name is Susan Rust. I reside just down the block in Ashland, and this is just really simple. And maybe it's simply the simple is that I don't understand it, but there are lots of discussions around town about problems, and I understand some of the problems because they've risen high, but I don't see anywhere a kind of a list of mission and goals for this committee, for the ad hoc committee. It would be nice if you're going to develop recommendations and a strategic plan based on problems. You kind of have to understand the problems and have some goals and a mission going forward, and I don't see that yet. I would like to. And the other thing has to do with public information to me. I go searching for the agenda, and the agenda says a meeting. It does not, this agenda is complete. The agenda online just says there's a meeting. It would be really nice if the agenda actually was published the day before the meeting, at the very least. And it would be nice if the minutes were published after the meeting, or at least once they're approved.
Thank you.
I'm Mark Pearl. I have two questions concerning the agenda. And I'd like to support Mike Gardner in moving quickly. When the reorganization came out first, 3 months only were requested. I don't know where the 5 months came from. It would be nice to have an explanation of why the 3 months absolutely recommendations by the end of the year came to be 5 months. I think one of the reasons is the slow meeting schedule. And that I understand is the reason of the schedule of the facilitator. And I'm wondering why we have a facilitator. Why can't the chairman run the meeting? I presume the facilitator is being paid for their services, and I'm just wondering, considering the concern for cost recovery, where that charge comes from. Is that going to be budgeted to the senior center as a function function of costs to run the center or the senior program. So it's just a little confusing to me. In the setup of this ad hoc committee, there's a subject what's on and off the table. Where did those recommendations come from? They were imposed as the rules of running the committee. Did anybody agree to them? Was that ever discussed? It's just a fiat indication what you can talk about and what you can't talk about. Seems very strange. Thank you.
Thank you. And our last speaker is Ellen Beck. Speak right into the mic. There you go.
I benefit from the Senior Center because of Marion's class and Tai Chi class, and I'm very grateful. But my concern is even beyond that, about the people who were served at the Senior Center in basic human services information and how that's been disrupted. And I would like to hear from the commission or the records department what their plan was to continue providing those vital services about reduced utilities or the polls or things like that when they let go of the previous staff. And that's vital information for so many people. And where can people go to get that information now? What was their plan to continue to provide that information and those services? Is there any place else in the city where that is available, or do they have to go to Medford, or what was your plan? I have heard nothing about that in any of the coverage, and would like to know how those people's needs are being addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's the end of our public input, unless we have anyone else. Okay. We're done.
Well, okay. I think this, right now, the next item on the agenda is about logistics. And you'll see that there are a number of overlapping issues. We might also talk about, as a committee, and maybe staff will have some recommendations about that, or Jackie, you'll have a preference as chair about how to respond to public input. Not necessarily right now today, but there were some questions asked, and I think that to the best of the committee's ability, if the questions have been addressed to the committee, or to the best of the commissioner's ability, if they've been addressed there, they could be usefully answered at some point in the future. So that we ought to discuss, as well as Anne's point about other ways to collect input. And then you'll see other issues listed there, including our meeting dates, our communication between committee members, where we're going to have these meetings, and that overlaps with how often and how quickly we can get done. So I think one at a time, we'll go through those issues as best we can. We've set aside 15 minutes. It's not a lot of time for that. Jackie wanted to say something.
Yes, I'm concerned about the amount of time we have. And scheduling meeting dates in this forum, okay.
Right.
There are issues, there are problems with that. It could take a while.
It sure could. I didn't want to say exact meeting dates, but whether we try to meet, right now we can meet once a month in November to today, December and January, where everybody could make it. The other option, if I've got this right, is that we meet more often, but not always here, and we endure absences of some committee members. So we can table that as
Well, I think the discussion can be, we could look at something, let me make a recommendation, that we look at a meeting like this that's televised, and there are issues, of course, with facility, there's issues with cost on how much it costs to televise, and we wanted to have that access for the public. And so to keep the cost down and use this room is helpful in the process. But we also could meet in smaller groups and work on various projects and recommendations and then share that information by email. And I certainly would like to encourage everyone to feel comfortable about getting email from everybody else on this committee, although I imagine there, because it's a public group, we'd have to stay to a certain number of people in an email grouping. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah.
So there's two issues you're talking about. Number of large meetings, all committee meetings, all committee member meetings and subcommittees, in which there's a discussion of the first subcommittee coming up shortly, and then communication amongst each other.
And the fact that to televise the larger meetings, this room does have an availability. It's the room is the issue more with the televising, and I know the commissioners know this, and the city council also uses this room as well.
Could I?
So next person, please. Peggy.
Yeah, I just wanted to speak to, my impulse is to say we should have more meetings with fewer people, if that's necessary. So in that way, a smaller meeting, instead of it being between emails of people, will actually be a public meeting. And so it makes sense to have it as a public meeting rather than as an email meeting.
And Peggy, are you okay with having one of those meetings a month, say, one meeting in here and one meeting somewhere else, say the Grove, where it's
senior
not,
center?
Where they're not televised?
Yeah.
Where the senior center?
Senior center, I think, would be preferable.
Let's have some public meetings at the senior center, those smaller groups.
The cost of televising is too high, it's my understanding, for anywhere but here. So are you still good with your recommendation for more meetings, but that some would not be televised?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can we have more discussion on that? Just a few minutes.
How about other people here?
Mary?
I'm pretty much in agreement with what Peggy said. I think we need to keep this moving, and one meeting a month is not going to do that. Even if we have 3 to 5 person subcommittee meetings, it's still not moving things along. So I think this is a good compromise. We can still have subcommittee meetings, 3 to 5 people, less than a quorum, that's fine. But I would very much approve of 2 meetings a week. If the logistics say that we can only televise one of those and can only have one of those here, that's fine. The second meeting could be at the senior center.
How many meetings did you say?
Oh, two meetings. Oh, that's wishful thinking. 2 meetings a month.
Okay, I want to double check.
Yeah.
All right.
Right.
More discussion on that? Yep, Jim?
It would be important to talk to Michael Black about the logistics of getting the minutes out and collecting all of the information required for the next meeting.
They can't hear you, Jim.
Otherwise, I would agree with Marion about 2 meetings a month, as long as the logistics can get taken care of.
Michael?
So, logistically, I think we can have 2 meetings a month. That's what we originally agreed to. Now, there's one person here who's not here, somebody missing, who's a key to this, this whole thing going forward, and that's Rachel Dials. And she had expressed some concern to me and the number of meetings that could potentially be scheduled. And I'd like to get her input on this, so I'm wondering if there's a way that we could have a smaller group meet and talk about that rather than discuss it here without her comments, which may have a lot of bearing on the decision, just because of the availability of staff.
Michael, would you say it's accurate, I'm just checking here, that it would be okay, Jim was asking to check with you logistically, to plan on 2 meetings a month pending Rachel saying, yep, we can manage that?
Yes, I think that would be okay to say that.
So let's say that and then check in with Rachel, if that's okay with everybody. And other people, not everybody's spoken on this.
Do you want to check on availability or agreement to people willing to meet 2 days a week, two days a month?
Well, I think that was the original design, so I'm assuming that that's a yes. Yeah? Okay. All right. Right now, and this is important, folks, and you've got this in your packet, we have scheduled December 11th and January 8th at 3:15 again in this room from 3:15 to 5:15. So those two meetings are scheduled, and we are going to look at scheduling others pending hearing from Rachel Miles. Okay, so, Ann, is that? I think I'm finished. On scheduling a number of meetings and where. Go ahead.
I just want to be sensitive to the fact that the televising of key recommendations, which allows dissemination to the public, if we are having the second meeting at the Senior Center, which is a great idea, but it's not televised, then I think anything that is key that comes up at those other meetings might be just quickly reviewed at a public meeting that is televised, so that there isn't that, I think there's a sensitivity to wanting this process to be very transparent.
Thoughts about that, folks?
Or we could have audio.
Well, if we're keeping up with the minutes, the public televised meeting will be approving the minutes of the previous not televised meeting. So presumably we could, instead of just voting yes, we approve, we could actually review those minutes for major issues. Would that work, do you think?
Everyone has, go ahead.
On the 11th and the 6th or 7th meeting, those that are going to be televised, right? We can review what had happened in the interim.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And everyone has access to the minutes, Marion? Because that was the issue, accessibility.
What do you mean, everyone? The public?
Yes.
I don't quite understand that comment, because I saw the minutes on the city website. Okay. I don't remember exactly how long ago, but it's more than a few days.
Yeah, I saw them on Friday, but sometimes the site is hard to locate where things are. But they did have the full agenda as well as the attachments on Friday.
Well, how about this, Ann? Because it is an accessibility issue, and minutes might not be accessible for some, whereas video might cover it for some, that we consider that suggestion as the agenda is constructed for each televised meeting. Okay? Okay.
I just want to point out the time, John. I know you're looking at that, and I want to make sure we have time to talk about the issues at the end.
Me too. Thank you, Jackie. So I think we're doing okay. What about communication between committee members? We're still doing all right on our time, by the way.
Okay.
Pay attention.
Okay.
Someone said something about number of allowable emails. That would be new to me. The history of this, email was considered, there was as a way to communicate amongst yourselves. There was some concern expressed by at least one committee member about too much email or just about that process. So I think we could usefully spend a few minutes talking about how to communicate amongst yourselves as we go forward. Anne?
I think the email should go to Jackie, and she should to be the conduit for that, so that there's some judgment imposed on lots of back and forth things. I hate getting into those long threads, and so maybe you could police that.
I'm fine with that. The concern would be, so to, you have to keep a quorum, I believe, even in your communications on email. You don't?
No, I don't.
Yeah, so it's, that's just what has to be controlled, that it doesn't go out to, you know, 11 people all responding back and forth and to each other. So that we just have to be careful with that. That's fine, though, for them to come to me and I could then move them forward.
Michael, this is just a good opportunity to talk about email etiquette back and forth. And our city attorney always advises us to consider communications and email when they're going to the big group as a one-way communication. And once you start responding back, then it creates problems with holding meetings outside of the public purview, things like that.
Right.
So just if you could remember that as you're going forward, if Jackie sends you an email, you may want to just respond directly back to Jackie if you have questions, as opposed to everybody. So.
Thank you.
Does this mean that we'll have access to each other's emails?
That's what you're deciding right now.
I think that's a good idea.
I agree.
So, Jackie, would you restate what you understand to have been sort of, well, no one's disagreed with it yet. There hasn't been a vote. But would you restate what you understand the current?
So let me just give you an example. Mm-hmm. So as we're setting up subcommittees on different ideas, there would be groups of us who want to sit down and work together. And we're going to need to communicate with each other to do some of that forming of subcommittees, because we're not going to be able to get all that done, I don't think, today on all the items.
No.
So we can do that by email, and they could come, people can email through me, and I could be working, for instance, with groups of three to five people in an email group, and that would be legal to go back and forth, because that would not be a quorum.
What about people not on the subcommittee and emails like that? I'm just trying to be thorough.
So if there are information emails, for instance, to a commissioner or information to Michael Black, that kind of thing, that would be a one-way. Or it'd be back and forth just to me.
So you said now emails to commissioners or to Michael, that would be by committee members, would be one-way.
No. So I believe any committee member here mm-hmm. could contact any committee member to discuss anything they want, as long as it's a one-to-one, even a one-to-two, you get three people having an email conversation. I believe that's legal and fine to do. Doesn't even have to go through me. But if we're starting to get into bigger issues where everyone wants to be involved in the conversation through email, then you do need some one person to make sure that we're staying legal with the number of people in the conversation.
So what do you think about this? So that it's fully understood that you write a draft of this policy, so to speak, and you send it to myself and as a representative of the commissioner, Michael, and we say, yeah, that's how we heard it too, or what about this change, and then we'll bring it back, or we'll just let everybody know, yep, this is what it is.
We do, yep, this is what it is.
Okay, good. Jim?
Requests for information can be disseminated to all members. That isn't under this discussion. That's that one-way communication. We can send information out. We just want to prevent that from hitting reply all and replying to everybody. Well, we'll try to do BCC everybody so you can't reply back to everybody.
Perfect. That's good.
All right, we're getting there on the logistical thing. The next thing that's listed is amount of public input time, and that was paired with ways for the public to get input to the committee other than through verbal public input at meetings. So let's do one at a time. Amount of public input time at meetings. We scheduled 15 minutes. There was a request for 21 because there were seven people, I assume. Thoughts about that? You can see we have two-hour meetings, 15 minutes, if it were that, 1/8 of the time. Your thoughts, committee, and your recommendations.
I think public input is extremely important. I think it should be at least 15 minutes. I'm certainly not opposed to 20. But in that discussion, I think we also need to look at one of the recommendations made in public input today, which is having committee members available at the senior center, those who would like to be. That would be something we would, I think we could work off this time to figure that out. I don't want to spend a lot of time doing that. I just would like to know if people are comfortable with that idea.
How are you?
Uncomfortable with that idea?
Seems reasonable.
Okay.
What's the expectation for feedback to the larger group from any of those in-person one-on-one conversations?
Well, I think that it would be helpful to form our thinking, whoever we talk to in the community, with whatever input they give to us. It's not going to be perfect. You're not going to hear. You're not going to be privy to other conversations if you're not there. But I think there's such a representative example of concerns out there that are very repetitive that if you're there one time during that, you know, one time during the week or one time during a 2-week, you're going to hear the same concerns that I hear on another day. So I don't think it's a problem.
And is that the only place we would have those conversations? Is that the senior center?
It doesn't have to be, but personally I really like the idea of committee members being at the senior center, and if facilities can be worked out there, places to talk. There are offices though there, and probably could be worked out, I think.
Marion, and then Jim?
Well, there's one storage room which we could make a little more accommodating and have it be, you know, a place to have beer from.
I would just like to suggest that on our regular meeting agendas that we have an item with the 2 minutes where people can bring up issues, either something that's occurred to them in their research or something that's been brought up in some of the one-on-one meetings. I just like to see that. That time or that item on the agenda.
So, vicarious public input.
So, Marion, I'm not going to lose that thought because it brings up something. There may be, or maybe I'm projecting it, some impatience with all of this process stuff so we can get to the issues. I am sympathetic, and I'm also aware there's a little saying. Go slow at first in order to go fast. We've got to get these process things in place so that we know how to move forward efficiently. So I want to say that so far there's been a vote here and there, and otherwise we've been giving Jackie an opportunity to write something up and we'll poll you all. There's been a sort of consensus emerging on some decisions, and so I want to keep us going in that fashion unless anybody has objections to that. And right now, we have a couple of ideas up, including the most recent, Marion's, that there be some time on each agenda for committee members to report to each other things of note that they've heard from others. Did I get that right?
Or found in their own research.
Or found in their own research. Comments about that? Do you think that's a good idea? And then I'm going to go back to the other things that were said. Yes, Jim.
Following up on that, our Parks Commission meetings have items from commissioners and items from staff on every agenda. And so I think it'd be an excellent idea, and I don't know how we schedule the time or how much time, since this is more rigid than our meetings. But it's very helpful in our meetings to have people make comments just in general about things, though. So I would agree that would be an important part of this.
Objections to this?
No, sounds great.
I think it's a good idea personally.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to go back. You remember we were going to say, Ann, because we haven't really landed on this idea of sort of an office hour, set of office hours. Catherine had asked what's the expectation. There was discussion of where that would happen. Maybe currently a storage room would be be made available. Where are we on this?
I think that's something that could be arranged through people outside of this venue. And it would be those people who want to do that. Who there may be committee members who don't necessarily want to have a regular public input session, and others that do. And so I think we do that through email.
That'd be fine. Are there at least two or three of you? Because
raise your hand if you are interested in coming to public input session.
Oh, good. Okay, I was worried a little bit about that.
Okay.
And so now there's not a strong expectation or hard and fast expectation. This is going to go forward. You're going to work on developing a facility for that, and that's going to be one venue, one way the public can get input to the community members.
And I'm happy to work with Rachel on that. So we can do that.
Oh, that's good. Now, there's still the question, and Anne, I know you've got your hands up too. We're almost going to be through the logistical part. Amount of public input time at meetings. We did 15 minutes, expanded to 21. Jackie said she's in favor of 15. Any more comments, arguments, suggestions?
It seems that 3 minutes is a reasonable amount of time. Some individuals, as we saw, were a minute and a half. But I think 3 minutes allows people to really speak the message that they'd like to communicate rather than two.
Well, and that makes sense to me too, personally, by the way. But what if there's 40 people who want to speak for 2 minutes? So
no,
I'm looking
21 minutes.
I'm looking for a total time.
I vote for 21 minutes.
Jim.
Our Parks Commission meetings, we've waived that 15 minutes more than one time lately because of just the fact that if people want to speak and you limit people, that doesn't go well. So this is a much more rigid schedule than our meetings, though. So we have an unlimited time. We have to extend meeting at 10:30, I believe, if it gets to that point. So we have a much broader agenda timing than we have here. So
yeah, we don't have much time, and
there's
a lot of people who want it to move forward quickly. Otherwise, you know, rigidity is not my favorite thing. There was a comment or response to Jim someone was going to make. Jackie?
I'm very comfortable with 20 minutes, increasing it to 20 minutes, and to also add the issues from committee members at the beginning towards the front of the agenda, and also have public input sessions at the Senior Center for people interested to do that. And I think with those ways of getting public input and sharing concerns in a back and forth manner, I think that should be enough.
You're also going to do two listening sessions and a survey. So I think that's a lot, personally. So any objection or additional to what Jackie's gone over or additional comments? Peggy?
No, this is just an additional comment. I think one of the frustrations is that questions come up from the public and they're never answered.
Yeah.
And so how are we going to answer the questions that or formally make a record of those questions and then make it and then answer them?
Thank you for bringing that up. That's the next thing.
Yeah, and I'm concerned too that in those one-on-ones, if that's what they are, we can't speak for this group. And so we really can only listen.
I agree
Thank
with
you,
that.
Captain.
I also want to mention that there is going to be a progress report, and Michael Black is going to be doing that progress report, correct, Michael? And I think in his progress report, there will be some questions answered. So I hope we can get to that soon.
So we're looking for a way to answer questions raised in public input. Jackie's saying in a progress report, perhaps some of that can happen.
Well, in this case, it will happen because there were some questions that came up that will be addressed either through one or several agenda items. But one thing I noticed that works well is, you know, if there are comments that are made that are formed as questions and the committee would like to hear answers to those, usually with the item at the end of the agenda, which is items from commissioner or committee members, you can say, I'd like an answer to that question. And that's a really good time to do that, to make sure that's not lost.
So committee members would say, I'd like to hear an answer to this question.
If you hear something in public comment and it's not answered, then, I think if you want to hear the answer to it, not all public comment are in the form of a question. Some public comment is just comment.
Yeah.
So if there are questions that you'd like to hear answered, it would work well for us if you brought those up in the meeting.
At what time, right after the public?
Well, I'd say at the items from the committee members so that we can get through our agenda. But it's up to the chair when those are brought up.
I just want to add that sometimes I would think that the question is not always answered by you or by a commissioner. The question might be, or it might be answered differently by a citizen member. So we definitely want to have opportunity for an alternative answer.
Right. So what's on the floor now, the table now, whatever metaphor we like, is that if committee members want an answer to the question, they can ask for that right away. And Jackie, you'll manage that?
Well, not during the public input time. That's not my recommendation, not while they're speaking.
I don't think it was Michael either. It was at some point in the agenda.
Yes, he was saying at the end of the meeting, whereas Marion was suggesting if we have issues that we're hearing about or in our own research, that might be better served towards the beginning of the agenda so that as we move through, we can address those issues. So I think maybe we're looking at both ends of the agenda where we might be bringing up issues then would be a good idea.
Okay. You know, I want to be careful taking silence as assent, as agreement, that I'm not hearing objections, so I want to move forward. This all sounds good to people so far. I want to take a vote on every single little thing. Okay, Anne, you're going to skip it for now? Okay, so I want to wrap this session before we go to the I think what it's called Program Quality Review Notebook, by saying we have some good plans in place now for input from the public primarily, and let's see how that goes. This is a hugely public issue, and we want to be adaptable as well as get as much as desired. At the risk of somebody imputing terrible motives to me, I want to bring up the possibility that there's so much time on responding to questions and having information brought from the public at the beginning, have the listening sessions, have 21 minutes of public input, might be at odds with the goal of getting this done in 3 to 5 months.
That's why we've got to have subcommittees, and we've got to work in small groups.
All right. We'll talk about our first subcommittee soon.
Okay.
But first, next agenda item. And it goes to the APRC director. And we have about 15 minutes, we're running late, of course, so let's hope that we can do this in 10 or so.
So a lot of people ask for this quality review book that was put together by the former senior center manager. It was done so at my request. I included the memo that prompted this quality review. There were a lot of people involved with preparing it, and as you flip through the pages, you can see various names of people who prepared different sections of it. The one thing I wanted to call out is that the cost recovery is incorrect. Okay? We do cost recovery based on total cost versus the revenue that comes in. So when I say I would like to see 20% cost recovery, let's just say I said that. That, in terms of the way we do cost recovery, means that of the total expenses, we'd be trying to recover 20% in revenue. For different programs, it's a different amount. The golf course is around 50%. The ice rink is closer to 90%. Swimming is in the 40 to 50% area. So in order to understand what we mean when we say cost recovery, what 20% means, or 35% or 45%, we have to be speaking the same language the whole time. So the language is, what is the total cost to perform the functions of the senior program, which is the entire budget? Now, the way that it was prepared, it shows 41%. Well, in our language, that means that it's doing pretty well, but it's not, the data behind it isn't the same as what we would have used to put it in the same language that we use with cost recovery. So I did a quick analysis using just the data that's available and the actual revenue and the actual expenses, and it comes back to around 2%. Nobody ever thought it was more than that. That's not the point. The point is that that's the actual cost recovery, and we do cost recovery analysis for every one of our programs. Every single one of our recreation programs has cost recovery, and this is how we do it. So if you look at the way we like to look at it, which is what, you know, the number of visits that happen, or what does it cost per visitor to come in? The more visitors, the less it costs per visitor, right? So that's just how we look at it, so that we can see what part comes from revenue, what part comes from the tax money that is set aside to fund the senior program.
Jeff?
So I want to say that I do understand what you're saying, that the amount of money coming into the center was basically through rent for the space in the facility, and that was around $4,100. I do want to recognize the fact that the staff at the senior center did perform a function for the city, is my understanding, in doing the utility work. My understanding is that might have been about $10,000 worth of staff time. I don't know that for a fact, though, but I'm just saying I think there is should be some understanding that the senior center provided personnel that I understand why people are looking at as a cost, the money that could have come in if they'd been paid for that.
I totally agree with you. If you go back to my recommendations from the subcommittee, my recommendations were to look at all cost recovery options. And the top of the list was getting the city to pay for the expense of running the programs that we run through the senior center.
Right. I do know that.
So I wanted to just call that out and say that that is the actual cost recovery. So, 2%, nobody thought it was more than that. It's not 41% when you consider it the way that we consider our cost recovery. And that's really the only caveat that I have for the program.
And one more thing, I just want a clarification. Because the program quality review is known as the binder out in the public. So that's what we're talking about. I just want to make sure people understand that.
Good, thank you. Ann?
I just want a point of clarification on capture of revenue. If there are uses of the senior center facility by other groups that are not specifically for programs that are traditionally senior center programs, and I don't even know if that's happening, but if it is, where would that be credited?
Well, that's a good question, and I think it would be two parts. One would be paying rent, which would be for the time that's used there, and then the other part would be for the actual class, or if you split it up, the full cost, I'd split it up like that. The recreation program does schedule classes in different buildings, and to use the building, I think the money should go to the senior center, to the senior program, but there might be some other costs associated, so it might be split up.
Well, similarly, if there were what I would consider a senior class at another Parks and Rec facility, is there any credit given to the senior program for that revenue? I mean, an example might be, senior golf, or some classes at the Grove that are really targeted at seniors, but they might generate income.
Right. It should be the same way in reverse, where If they're using the Grove, there would be a small amount for rent to cover expenses at the Grove, but anything above that would be credited to the senior program as revenue.
Ooh.
Mary.
I asked this question in an email, and what Rachel told me is that at this point, there's only one non-senior program use of the senior center. It's for an adult rec class, and the income for that adult rec class goes to adult rec, is what she told me.
That's why I'm careful that they should. So, and we can look into that and make sure that's accounted correctly, but that's the way that it should happen with all of our programs. So I appreciate you bringing that up, and we will look into that.
Okay. The last item under that reference to the binder is about, there were some questions about why doesn't the committee start to consider a new mission for the senior programs. And it was thought by Jackie and me, and with the support of Michael, Rachel, and Susan, that at least at this time, at least unless committee members think they want to be involved in developing a new mission statement, that the recommendations be made first, and then how a new mission, should there be one, for the senior program, that be developed, that how that gets developed be decided by the commission. Jackie?
I just want to point out that there is a mission statement for the senior program right now. And it is well served, in my opinion, in moving forward in making recommendations. I don't think we need to redo a mission statement in order to move ahead.
Okay. I think there'd be a problem with that.
I have a question about the binder concept. Is this some book someplace? Why is it called that?
Okay. I think it's because everything was put into individual binders, but it was questions asked. That Michael Black asked the senior center manager about 13 questions, if I remember.
I saw that whole 100 and some odd pages.
And in response to those questions, because they were pretty big questions requiring data and information and surveys, so it was accumulated into a binder, and we called it the Program Quality Review for the senior program.
So the way I look at it, there's a lot of work that went into this, and there was people were proud of what they put together, so it was given a name, and it took on that name of binder. And there's a lot of good information in there, so I think that's why it has that name. And that's what we refer to it as well.
Okay, I want to move us on. We're a little behind, but not too bad yet. We're on a progress report from the director. 10 minutes for update on senior program, and then survey comments and participation. Who has that item? Okay, that's right, Mary. So I think it's Michael first on the update.
Okay, I'll try to go really quick. Each week, each time we meet, we're going to try to give an update on what's going on with senior program. I'm doing this for Rachel Dials, and she's out right now, and she is attending some training. So the senior center is open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. We do have staff down there full time, and we are, I'll talk about it in a second, we are getting training for those staff, and we are trying our best to meet the needs of the people who are coming into the senior center. I want to add something here that Rachel didn't have in her update for your information. I've talked to a few people, and I think that it would be wise to start looking at the recruitment for a full-time senior center manager sooner rather than later. And that's one of my goals this week. I've already sent an email to the HR director at the city to give me a hand and start to put that together. So that's going to be happening right away. Of course, right away in HR terms, it takes a few months to do that, but we're going to get that started. So the regular programs and services continue. And there's a list of those in your notebook, but Tai Chi, yoga, line dancing, and so on and so forth. We did have an AARP driving class held at the Senior Center on October 25th and 26th with 29 participants. We had a fall clinic, which I know We talked about the last meeting over in the Grove, and the fall clinic was held in the Grove, and we still had about 15 people show up for that. We will try to hold those at the Senior Center in the future. Thanksgiving dinner is being organized by the Ashland Fire Department with our assistance. That will be going on, and 100 people have RSVP'd so far, and we're looking forward to that next Monday, the 20th. The meals from RV Cog are continuing to take place every day, and they did a Halloween party just recently, which had 20 people attending. There's a series on aging that Ollie is producing, and Rachel Dials, Jackie Bachman, and Peggy Burns, I believe, are attending that, or have attended at least a few. And Anne, are you attending that as well? And then I believe it's being, who's teaching that?
Being taught by Laura.
Laura.
It was taught. It's finished now.
And Alan Waldman.
Okay.
And we've completed the 5-week course.
Okay, great. And I know that Rachel said she got a lot out of that, and she appreciated the opportunity to go to that. So thanks for inviting her to that. So there's also been other training that has happened with Laura Champagne from RV Cog that's happened specifically with our staff at the Senior Center to help them recognize the services that ADRC provides. We do and are still providing the utility assistance, and you can go to the Senior Center for that assistance, or, now this is additional, you can go to the City Hall for that assistance as well. I'm just going to give you some stats really quick so you know it's still going on. So 7 discounts have been issued so far for the City of Ashland Utilities Program, 5 with the HEAT program, the HEAT assistance, and 2 senior utility discounts. Well, that's the 7, actually. So 5 HEAT assistance and 2 senior utility discounts. And Bryn Morrison down at the city offices, this is her program. They're actually paying for it now because they are administering it. But we still are in contact for that, and we are still trying to process those at the Senior Center as well. We did do a participation report, which Marion's going to talk about. And upcoming in 2018, staff is looking at scheduling a chronic pain workshop. I know that there is opportunity to come and talk to a pharmacist coming up pretty soon, and various other things going on. We are still trying to do our monthly newsletters to try and let people know about what is going on. But I think the biggest thing that we want to get across is that the Senior Center still is open from 8:30 to 3:30 every day, and we are trying our best to provide the same services that have been going on under APRC for the last 10 years.
Thank you, Michael, for giving us that progress report. I want to emphasize, and I want to hear more about what's going on in terms of training for outreach to our fragile seniors, for our super seniors. And I don't know, Laura, do you by any chance know what training Laura Champagne is giving to the staff?
Lauren Champagne, is her name Lauren?
Lauren.
Yeah, just a correction.
Thank you.
She came over and met with the staff.
You need to pull it really close.
You pull it towards you.
Okay. She came and met with the staff and reviewed an array of service opportunities similar to what we were covering in the aging class, the Ollie aging class. It was not as extensive. There is a plethora of information out there, but it was a baseline training.
So I would understand from that, having been to several of the classes, not all of them, but that the current full-time staff member has a list and contact information of all different kinds of people working with seniors with depression or working with seniors trying to get transportation to a medical appointment, that kind of thing?
A distribution of the referral sheet that you're familiar with was given to staff, and as my understanding, they've been educated about access points to humans that have information about the various programs and the ADRC.
And is it an ongoing training? I could ask either one of you, or is this a one time that's happened so far?
Well, I would hope that it's not one time, that we would do it as needed. I think
it's needed, Michael. This is very needed.
Well, we're working with RV Cog, and we'll try and define how to do that. But as of right now, just to answer your question, I don't think we have another one scheduled right now.
We do not.
Okay.
because that is one of the big issues in the input that I have received from the community, that when experienced staff is no longer there, you lose the contact and the outreach and the ability to really check in on fragile seniors, because they don't just speak up. You have to go out to them. And so I really want to encourage all of us to think about a way that there could be some kind of a log developed, a phone log, that staff could be calling on customer satisfaction to seniors. Did you get your meal on Wednesday? You know, how are you doing? How are you getting to your appointments? How are you feeling? Anything we can do to help? This is a real missing link out there, and people are very concerned, I can't say that enough, about how to continue the outreach that you automatically have when you have staff members who have worked at the senior center for years and years and years.
Well, and what you're describing is something that we can do. I don't think that there's any reason why we can't have the current staff do that. And so I'll get on that right away, and I want to see what RBCOG is doing as far as the Meals on Wheels is going and things like that as far as contacts go, and if we have access to your contact information for Food and Friends, and all that kind of stuff. But I'll get right on that.
I really appreciate that, because the sooner you can get back to us on information of what we're doing to reach out to our seniors, the sooner the public is going to have more trust in what we're accomplishing here.
Okay.
Well, I'm curious, where in the 158 pages the report on that aspect of what happens at the senior center is reported? Because I see, you know, this is all about classes, but it isn't that.
I think in terms of me saying a log, is that what you're referring to?
Well, I'm just curious where the information is about how often those kinds of questions come up, how often a staff has been dealing with them.
Okay, so I'm really speaking from my own personal experience of being at the senior center 3 to 5 days a week. I also personally met with the senior manager at least on a weekly basis to look at concerns and how to communicate and check in on how everyone's doing. So, no, there aren't necessarily a lot of contact logs that I know of. I do know, though, because I have been a part of other senior centers, that that's a very important tool that needs to be in place. There should be logs, there should be phone contact, information going both ways, and I think that's something that training that Laura and ADRC and Senior Disability Services, that they could help us do a better job of that, because it's very, very important.
Sounds like it's on Michael's agenda, if you'll allow me to step in here and continue to move things along, if that's okay. So thank you, Jackie, and Catherine, and Michael. I think we are updated, and I want us to move Marion to the survey, comments, and participation.
Okay, I'll try to do this fairly quickly.
Yeah, well, we're behind, but you know, we're going to have to plan on getting behind on occasion and see what we want to do about that. So please go forward.
Okay, well, just a comment. I think every one of the committee members has access to the information that was put together by Natalie at the Senior Center.
Yes.
Natalie and Rachel both very helpful in stepping in and getting this going. So what I'm saying is probably more for the people who are sitting back there. So if you have questions about something that I'm talking about, just hold your hand up and I'll just expand a little more on it. We had a survey that I kind of put together. It's fairly succinct. It's just question one, what do you like about the senior center? Question two, what would you like to see added? And question three, where do you get information about events in the senior program? Because I wanted to know how we needed to market better, be sure the information was out there. And then Rachel wanted to add a question, would you like to receive more information about the senior program? And a lot of people said yes. So it looks like we had about 48 people that actually answered, sent in responses to the survey. If you look at the binder, Chris had reported on a survey that she had done, and I think she had something like 150 responses to the survey she did. However, she kind of walked that through. She took it to every class and presented it and asked for people to respond. So this one was done with less attention in terms of presenting it to every class with something specific. But still, we got 48 people responding. There are a lot of nice things they said about the senior center in terms of what they'd like to see added. I personally wrote down about 8 ideas that people came up with that I thought were really good ideas. And I think probably Jackie has her own list. Maybe other people have their own list of things that they liked there. Information about events, it was a pretty wide spectrum all the way. A lot of people looked at the city guide, I think it's now called the play guide, the Parks and Rec class guide. And looking at the daily tidings was another way that I think perhaps we haven't utilized so well for senior center classes. So again, there's some ideas about things that we can possibly do to improve our marketing, to improve what we offer at the senior center. So I felt pretty good about the survey.
So 2 questions for you, sure. Facilitative questions, I hope. How would the public access the results of that survey? Is there a way that they could? If interested.
Yeah. We'll get it on our website.
Okay. That'd be great. That'd be great. And then Marion, suggestions about you know, you said there are 8 good ideas that you like, and so how will those be acted upon or not acted upon, or what's gonna happen with those suggestions?
Well, what do you think I wanted to have this issue thing on the agenda?
That's what
I would expect. To
okay.
Idea.
Okay. Okay. So you're thinking about that for the next time?
Well, yes, I guess, because we don't have that on our agenda today.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes, that's right. Thanks. Yeah, Peggy.
Yeah. Many of the things that we do here have been done before very well. One of them is surveying senior centers. And so you can go on to the National Institute of Senior Centers and get things like a senior center tool evaluation toolkit.
Right.
And this is already done for us. We don't have to do this work on this committee. We can go into something like this and get a very already established survey that has been put out that got, in addition to suggestions like this, all the demographic information on the, who is using the senior center, whether it's women or men, how old they are. And these surveys are arranged and designed so that they're objective, so people can answer them very quickly by circling and checking off. And so we get enormous, much more information than you can get from subjective questions like this. So I would suggest that we at least consider going back, although you had at the other meeting, the last meeting, you pointed out that surveying twice can be a downside to it. But go back, and particularly if we can come up with a survey that is easy for people to do, to get more responses, if there are possibilities to getting 150 responses, get more responses and also know what are the demographics of who is using the senior center and more information about them.
Okay, the survey is coming up on an agenda item that's next, and you're in alignment with your chair who's been talking about that toolkit previously, and we're getting ready to go to the next item on the agenda, the last item with several sub-points. But Anne, you have a comment or a question?
That would be answered in the next
item.
How we do these assessments, yeah.
Okay.
I want to point out, I'm talking about a survey at the senior center of seniors, of the people who are already using it, not about the public, and that's another survey.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for that clarification, Pete. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. So now we have, 28 minutes left for issues. And the issues that were selected for today were done so because they seem preliminary to other issues. Hopefully we're going to have more time and more meetings and subcommittees. However, right now, one issue that emerged was current budget for the senior program, and the director is charged with speaking to this.
So I tried to give you a little bit of information on the budget and how our budgets work. I gave background information that we have 3 funds, the the Bain Fund is the Parks Fund, which supports all the functions, all the operational functions within Action Parks and Recreation. And that is funded through a millage on assessed value of properties within the city of Ashland, and that's $2.09 per thousand. And that comes to the two Parks and Recreation, and that's a historic amount that's come to Parks and Recreation. And then we're asked to split that up and do everything that we can with that amount. And that's why cost recovery comes into this, because cost recovery allows us to, and I'm not talking about the senior center, but maybe I shouldn't even mention it, but cost recovery allows us to stretch that 209 as far as we can. Because if we have other resources coming in, the 209 goes a lot farther and we can do a lot more with it. So just really quick, I gave three biennia background on the budget for the senior center. 2013 to 2015, 2015 to 2017, 2017 to 2019. I broke it down into the groupings that we use for the budget and line items. And so we've got salaries and wages, fringe benefits, and so on. You can see that salary and wages in 2013 to 15 were 180, 320. And 2015-17 went up to 232, and that's the budget that just ended on June 30th of 2017. And then the one that started on July 1st of 2017, the salaries and wages are 177. Now there's not all of that 232. I think there's a lot of questions about cutting the budget and all that different kind of stuff, but not all of that 232 was attributed to hours in that period of people working. There's other things going on there, and it's not, you couldn't divide that by the number of, by the average pay per hour and get the number of hours worked at the center. There's other things in there. I can't really get into those things, but not all of that equals people on the ground in the 232. I just want you to be aware of that. So a more typical budget would be $180,000, $177,000, you know, somewhere in that range for personnel. So I want to call that out really quick. So as you can see, the budget has increased, except for, you know, that odd year of 2015-17 increased a lot. But you can see it progressively increasing, just like any of our budgets. They grow about 3 to 5% per year or per biennium, as we're looking at here. As a pie chart, I just threw that in there just so you can see. We're no different than any other employer. Personnel takes up most of our budget, just like anybody else. And then just a quick line chart to show you kind of how it went up and then back down again. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, but that's pretty short and sweet. That's what the budget is.
Mary?
Well, just one really quick clarification. I'm not used to dealing with biennial budgets, so these are all years for, numbers for 2 years.
2 years, yeah.
So 180,000, there would be 90,000 in approximately 1 year and 90,000.
That's right.
Okay. And then would you mind speaking to the two numbers that are kind of stick out, like total fringe benefits in 2015-17 and total contractual services in 2017-19?
Well, let me look at the contractual services. Okay, so let's start with the fringe benefits. So fringe benefits is a function of the line above it, salary and wages. Mm-hmm. So as that line goes up, our finance department starts budgeting more money. So I think that's why it was higher. This was actually, I will double check on this if you'd like, and I can email you, but this is the actual. So it shows that fringe benefits were up that year, and that might have something to do with what I was talking about before. It might transition into that next line down. There was one expense in there that was quite large and unplanned for that we paid out of there that skewed those numbers. As far as the contractual services, so in the past there's been, and this is one of the budgeting issues that I'm dealing with as a director, there's been things that are done in this division that are charged over here. And in this last biennium, I did everything that I can, or in this current biennium, I did everything that I can with the budget to get the actual cost to where the actual services are being performed. So that is what it is in there is the heat, the gas, you know, for the building itself, all the utilities, I'll just say all utilities, plus all the money it costs to clean the facility during that time period.
Other questions about the budget? Yeah, Ann.
In speaking, and perhaps it's a good time to answer the question that was raised about health benefits not being taken and yet maybe charged, or you know, can you address whether that's true?
Sure. So what I tried to present to you are actuals, and so everything here would be representative of what was used, not just what was budgeted and not used. I'm going to confirm that for you just to make sure that's the case, but that wouldn't translate into an actual budget. If there was money budgeted that wasn't taken advantage of, that wasn't used, it would have gone back into the budget at the end of the year. It wouldn't be counted towards an actual expense, so it shouldn't show up here.
And actually, another question I have about the budget is, in order to be able to see what maybe realistically we have to work with, if we knew in the biennium, which was a bigger number, 358 whatever thousand, how much of that money has been spent, how much has been committed, and how much is actually now available, because that will really help us determine whether some of the ideas that we have are feasible, because I'm not assuming that you're going to place some extra money on us.
I wouldn't assume that won't happen.
Okay.
So I don't, my advice to you would be to, you know, obviously I would love it if you kept within the framework of budget, but if there are things that you're going to recommend that could potentially have budget implications, I don't think that that's something we should not bring up because of that.
Okay.
And that they can still go to the commissioners, and the commissioners, I can look at the budget, and I can see all the other parts of it, and we can try and figure things out and try to balance things out. But I'm just cautioning you, you know, you're here to look at to see what possibilities there are for the senior program. And obviously, you couldn't recommend to build a new building and then it would just happen, but there's no funding for that. But, you know, I'd like you to be able to make recommendations based on what you think there needs to be done, what you think needs to be done, just like the performance audit did. And then we can identify resources in the future. Maybe some of it is phased as we go along, as we get more resources and things like that. So don't discount it right away.
I think it's very pertinent, though, that we're looking at money that maybe was going to go to salary that is now going to staff at a much lower pay rate, for instance. I mean, there's money that basically is not being used right now. And I just want to, again, go back to the need for training right now, and that training monies to help staff become more experienced and have better ways of contacting and communicating with fragile seniors, that money could be then utilized right now.
Yeah. So I agree with you, Jackie.
Okay.
And that's what we're trying to do.
Okay.
We're trying to, in implementing the recruitment process for a manager, is working towards that as well. The other thing, I think somebody asked if you could see what is left. I'm more than happy to share that with you, but just keep in mind what I said about, you know, don't feel constrained to make recommendations based on, you know, what you see in there and how you figure what you're recommending fits into what's left, okay? I can send that out. We do a monthly update on our budget, and we can send that out to you.
Great question. Open answer, pretty much. Anything more on budget? Peggy?
I'm sorry. I missed why the 41,000 is so much greater in this biennium than the former two. How 41,000 for utilities for compared to 11,000 last year?
It's not all utilities.
Or last biennium?
What this comes down to, basically, is the service that we use to clean the facility was paid for in different places over the years. So everybody's budget went up a little bit for cleaning, and another budget went down a little bit for cleaning because now it's being charged in the places where it belongs. So there was money that came in to cover it. It was just being paid for out of a different budget before, and it's the contract that we have for cleaning the facility.
That is the real cost of cleaning that building?
Yeah, that's 2 years.
For $20,000 for the year?
Yep, that's 2 years.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'll just mention, I did say utilities before. If you look at the maintenance line, you can see how utilities has gone up a little bit from 13-15 to what was actually spent in 2015-17 and then what was actually budgeted in 17-19. So that's also charging in the budget for where the services are being used.
All right. So we're going to go to current and possible partnerships. You received information on the current partnerships. I believe I thought I had it in my hand, and I do not. I know I saw it listed somewhere. Thank you. I don't need to read it to you. It's quite a long list. And if I understand it correctly, and I want to check this with you, Jackie, that the idea is to take a look at those current partnerships and sort of ask, well, where are there gaps and or what other partnerships might be pursued on behalf of senior programs? I think that's the question in front of us. Yes?
Well,
maybe not.
I think that is something that we may want to hear from our field representatives on what they think would be appropriate. So I'm looking more to Laura, to Catherine.
Her name was
to Mary.
For just that question, is that correct? Is that the question we're asking them to address?
Well, I'd like to hear what makes sense and have some education possibly for the committee. I'm looking at Laura for understanding ADRC, for understanding senior disability services, for, you know, what's available and how can we start getting those services available to the center.
Yep, one of our issues. Great. Laura.
I think what might be a wise idea is when you were speaking about perhaps developing a subcommittee to do some brainstorming together. We have a lot of content that came out to us today to look through, and we have the advantage of having senior disability services for both Jackson and Josephine counties well connected with a plethora of partners. And instead of my sitting here and just starting to name things out, it might be valuable to look over this list and have some discussion in a small group to see where we might, as a subcommittee, make recommendations to the larger committee.
I think that's an excellent idea, especially given the time. Any other thoughts on that from anyone else?
I think that's a great idea.
And I wonder if, Laura, if you couldn't be one of those people on the subcommittee.
I would be happy to do that.
Okay. Are there others who fill into that particular expertise area? Okay. So Catherine and Anne, three of you.
We need someone who's on one.
I'd be happy to help with that.
And Rob. Okay, that would be great. So Rob, Anne, Catherine, and Laura, I think that's a great idea to talk about partnerships and then report back.
Michael, were you going to say something?
I was just going to ask if that would be okay to have Rachel be involved.
I think
it'd be good for informational purposes.
Yeah.
I think that would be valuable as well because Rachel was able to attend some of our aging class, and so she will be able to contribute and maybe expand the conversation.
Great. Thank you.
So a comment on process, that makes five people for that subcommittee. We're going to have, it sounds like Jackie is recommending, and I personally think it's a good idea, a number of subcommittees, because it's so hard to do such detailed business in a large group when we're meeting so infrequently. So So just, I want to kind of say to be prepared to be on a number of subcommittees as we go forward. That's where the guts of the work is going to take place, it looks like. And so we've got a subcommittee on partnerships, which will bring information back to the larger committee. And who's going to organize that? Who's going to take the lead on getting you all together?
It would appear that it might be something I could offer.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you so much, Laura.
Yeah, you sure about that? Okay.
My considered offer stands.
Okay, great. Thank you, Laura. Thanks. Now, speaking of subcommittees, it was thought that with regard to citizen input, specifically open house and survey planning, or planning for the survey, that there be a subcommittee of three or four people who might be willing to start planning that. Jackie has some comments.
Mm-hmm, I do. On the open house and the survey, the open house is a fairly simple thing to do. I have a little draft plan that I'd be happy to work with Rachel and Natalie on how to do that. I'm a public school teacher is where I started and have done many, many open houses, back to school nights, and the kind of information. It's basically a three-step process. And staff puts it on, they talk, they give information about the senior center, it has to be advertised well, you take about 20 minutes for information, you take 20 minutes to talk about the different agencies and services connected to the center, and then you spend about 20 minutes just walking them around the facility and showing them where things are and be comfortable with the facility. But what I'd like to see is that open house happen fairly soon. I'd like to see it happen in the month of December, and the reason for that is because when you do a community survey, a needs assessment, which I think is very important, I think that is going to be some very serious work that will need to be done on that. Community needs to have seen the center. People need to be able to come in and have an idea of what the senior center is about. And so an open house, the way you do that to enlarge it to a bigger population is you do two. You just pick a day, you know, you figure out a day in December, you have one during the day, and it's about an hour. That's how long the open house is. But you have a program. And then you do another open house that night after 5 o'clock. Again, another hour. It's basically the same program. And again, the advertising in the paper and getting it out to where people will see it so they can come and participate. That's typically how you would do it in the schools. You do the same thing.
But do people have to sit in little chairs?
No.
So then, Jackie, you're offering to take the lead on that on your own? Do you?
I would do it with Rachel.
With Rachel? Yeah.
Rachel and Natalie would be key. And also certainly Michael being there as well. And it is not, the open house is not a place where we take a lot of input. It's a place where we give information and we share about what is the senior center.
Other comments about this? Desire to participate? Any kind of comment? Marion?
Just one comment about the timing on this based on looking at class attendance in my yoga classes and seeing how seniors work. If you're going to have two open houses, I really suggest having one in December and one in January. Seniors travel a lot.
I would do it again. So I would I'd have one in December, and then I would have one in January.
But two each time. Okay.
Yes.
Back to back.
It could be back to back, yes.
Can I ask you what the possibilities are for us to look at a wider audience than the people who are currently going to the senior center?
Well,
you know, I think that's the issue in front of us is how to make this the most inclusive senior center or opportunity for seniors in our whole community.
And that's why you make sure that when you do the two in the one day, that one of them happens after 5 o'clock. Because people in the community who are caring for their elders, they then would be able to come. come to that open house, and that's very important for them to understand where is it, what is it, how can my mom and dad participate possibly. But that's how you try to get to that wider audience.
It seems to me it's maybe an outgrowth of what Laura's going to coordinate for, or how get some leadership about. Because I think we want to look at constituencies outside of the senior center and what their view is of what would make this the most viable place for them.
And you're talking about widening the constituency, I think.
Yes. Okay.
And who might come to the open house. Is that right, Catherine?
Well, not just that. It might be that having a venue away from the senior center might bring a different group of people as well. Any place where there are seniors gathered.
Michael, and then we have the
senior center.
So, that's a great suggestion, and I think, obviously, it's been said by you many times, I'm going to take the opportunity to say now, that we are planning to keep the headquarters of our senior program at the senior center. But I've been saying since we started that, you know, we do want to expand and explore those neighborhoods outside. And I think I would encourage you, if you feel it's appropriate after discussing it as a group, we will encourage you to do it, and we will try and accommodate it the best we can, just to kind of see what happens.
When you say do it, you mean
have one outside of just the senior center, just to see if for nothing else as an exploration.
And I do see an open house done by staff, so that's a chance for people to understand. The idea in my mind for an open house is so people can see their senior center. This is the Ashland Senior Center. This is, what is it, 1699 home, you know? And here are the people who are available right now at the center. And this is what we're doing. And then later on, you're going to have this needs assessment survey come go around, and people can respond to what they've had a chance to look at and know about. And it's a way of getting an improvement model, too, on what you're currently offering. So I would recommend you not have it anywhere but at the senior center, because I'll tell you, that's one of the things I do here. That's a different kind of input than the people sitting here in this audience. And the input is, gosh, I don't know anything about the senior center. I've never been to the senior center, and I'm a senior, they'll say. And I think this would give people an opportunity, especially now that there is so much interest in the public right now about the senior center, I think they should come on in and see it.
So let's keep talking about this. It sounds like there's a couple of different goals that are being addressed with these open houses. Anne?
I think to the point of including people beyond the existing users of the senior center, Ron and I can talk about this, but we have 1,100 members at Ollie that are residing in Ashland. And I think a lot of people think that Ollie members are not among our potential users of the senior center, when in fact a lot of them, we have people on scholarship, for example. We have people who are very frail and physically challenged. So we have a wide range of ages. We have people who are caring for elderly parents. So some of those groups would be reached if we can utilize outreach to Ollie members, and we just have to be careful about our, you know, our relationships there. And as well, we have a communications and outreach function as part of our RVCOG Senior Advisory Council. So we have mechanisms in place to reach a lot of people, to broaden people coming and seeing the senior center.
So, Anne, are you speaking in favor of keeping the open houses at the senior center, which is what Jackie was doing, and achieving the goal that mm-hmm. Catherine alluded to in other ways?
Yes, right. And actually, okay. Ashland Home has a big group of seniors
okay.
that are not coming to the center.
Okay. So Jackie has volunteered to manage this along with Rachel. Are there other people who want to join that or give input to Jackie? Maybe not now, but later. Anything else about this?
I would like to be able to move forward with the okay of the committee with staff. staff being the ones to put it on. And I would certainly be there and guide it and, you know, go over the plan for organizing it. But I would hope that we can get on this. This is one thing I think we could do in the next month.
Michael, you were going to say something?
I was going to say that we will follow whatever direction comes from the committee, but I would just ask that the people who do have the ability to help us reach out farther be involved in defining how we advertise this process or this event or multiple events. Okay.
So who's going to do that? Anne? Catherine? Laura? Rob? You have the list, as I understand
it. Well, I just have to say that one mechanism would be during classes, like we are going to be dark in December, but we have to have a discussion about whether we can use our other avenues for electronic avenues for reaching our membership. Maybe a policy question.
And certainly the newspaper is very useful. So
I'll help with communication.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So can we? Did you want to say something, Mary?
I think it's been covered.
Okay.
I'm just really in agreement with this, and I think it's really a matter of how you advertise it, and it should be at the senior center.
Mm-hmm.
And then that allows people who don't use it to come and then formulate questions or ideas they may have. I think that's an excellent way to do it.
And actually, I'm counting on staff to be able to know some of the best ways to do that advertising, because Parks and Rec, you guys have a great play guide. You do have many ways of advertising things, but not that it would be in the play guide. But that's something I think that staff can definitely get on and do.
We can, and we will put the team together to do it. So.
Okay, and I'm helping all the way.
And you've got assistance from me as well. Great, good. We're making some progress. We have 1 minute. That's all we need.
It would be great if we could establish the subcommittee.
More people to volunteer to be the subcommittee to plan the survey.
Right on.
We've got Marion,
she's
one person. We've got Ann, Peggy.
I'm going to volunteer on the staff then, just give Rachel a little break from do something.
That's great. So,
can you tell me what the survey is?
Yes.
Yes,
because I don't know, to tell you the truth. You were looking to me. I think Jackie Michael will have some more history on that that will fill in that information. Who just raised their hand? So I want to get it.
Can that in any way include things like focus groups or something like that, or are we talking just a handout questionnaire?
That's
well,
a very good question, because
yeah.
Focus groups is an excellent way to get information, so I appreciate you bringing that up.
Well, one of the things that we've talked about is balancing the thoroughness versus efficiency tension or balance, and that is going to be up to the committee. It could be a one-page survey, or it could be focus groups and interviews, and it could go on for a long, long time. So you're going to have to find the perfect way. And then I think Laura wanted to say something.
A lot of times you can use your focus groups to narrow down the questions. That would get your qualitative, then you do your quantitative in a survey mechanism. But I also want to say that there are also existing needs assessment things out there already that we should study. One of them was done by RVCOG as part of the Area Agency on Aging Plan for our
region.
Yeah, and that ARP has also done a Southern Oregon Livability survey. So we should be looking at these other things to not to replicate.
And Peggy was pointing to the toolkit that Jackie alluded to earlier. There's Survey Monkey or other kinds of versions of this. And I think we need one person to sort of gather the people who volunteered. And I'm looking over at Mary and just because I thought maybe you would. So do you have the names? And you know,
so
Michael.
I got and Peggy.
And I caution you, I just, if you'll allow me this comment, it's great that people have this interest. And as you've decided with the larger meetings, if some people cannot make, press on, mm-hmm. You know, your planning.
I agree.
Because one thing nobody said anything about today, and we all know it, is we are in the holiday season.
I know.
And visitors and trail roads and all.
Yep.
Trying to remain in denial about that. Okay. Is there anything else with the go to the order? We're only 2 minutes over. Peggy.
I just want to bring the attention. There was a question in, from the public about bringing more people into, or why we would need to do any of the things that we're doing. And I just wanted to point to another thing put out by the National Institute of Senior Centers, a 2009 New Models of Senior Center Task Force final report. And it exactly addresses all the things that we're talking about here and points out the fact that the changes in the older population that we're having to deal with both on both ends. It's not just boomers that we have to worry about addressing, but also actually, well, according to this report, there's going to be a greater percentage of seniors 85 and older who we have to embrace and care for. So that combined with the fact that there'll be less funding, less public funding. So we're going to have to, so we do have to care for these people, we do have to outreach more, and also we have to find funds to do the job.
Okay, thank you. I would like to congratulate you on doing good work, getting some processes in place, taking a look at some of the issues. Jackie, I want to meet with you soon to sort of frame up where we can go in creating the goals for this committee to an efficient path for making recommendations, as efficient as we can create it. And I want to thank you all for your time and everybody in the audience and wish you all a good evening. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Jackie, I'm Susan Rust, and won't take your time, but